Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website. And I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 98. I'm recording it on Thursday, February 19th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 13. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com. And the name of this selection is Lacan. The title of the podcast is, Are Bubbles Inevitable? I'm going to start by reading a little bit from a post by P.K. Crafter at the Vanguard Diehards board. P.K. Crafter is a longtime apologist of passive investing, but he's had a number of fine posts recently at the Vanguard Diehards board. I think the sense I get is that P.K. Crafter is having some second thoughts about his religion, but we'll see how that turns out. But this post was a good one, and I mentioned another good post by P.K. Crafter, I think, a couple days ago. This one, I'm not going to read the whole post, but I have some notes here, and he was talking about a television program that I believe may have ran on CNBC called House of Cards, dealing with the collapse of the bubble. And he says, he mentions here, P.K. Crafter mentions, it's about bubbles. And he says, this is a classic one. What's surprising is that the last one is so recent and still it made no difference. Of course, we had the collapse of the tech bubble back in 1999. Not too many years later, we have the collapse of the passive investing bubble. And then he says, one guy that was interviewed knew that there were problems, and he continued making loans anyway, but still claimed no responsibility for the problem. And P.K. Crafter's comment here is amazing. Then he goes on to say, this shows why bubbles will always exist. They will only stop if those in charge of oversight do their jobs. But as we've seen, they too get caught in the mania. This one has to unwind itself, and there is no way to make it pleasant. Those who chose greed over responsibility should be punished. Now I have some comments. It is a bubble, of course, that caused all the problem. We bid stock prices up to 3 times their fair value. The stock market would collapse if the price didn't drop to bring them at least down to fair value, which is a loss of 68%. Of the accumulated wealth of most middle-class Americans. And when you take away 68% of the accumulated wealth of most Americans, you're going to have a collapse in the economy. Surprise, surprise. People can't buy houses. People can't go on vacations. People can't buy cars. People lose their jobs. Businesses shut down. On and on and on. So there was nothing surprising about this. Obviously it wasn't a surprise we were in a bubble. All you had to do was look at the valuation level. It wasn't exactly hard. So we knew we were in a bubble. We knew that bubbles always cause a collapse in the economy. And the most recent two bubbles caused disastrous consequences in the economy. The most recent bubble before this one was the one in the 1960s, and that led to the stagflation of the 1970s, which was a big factor in President Nixon being removed from office and was a big factor in the failed presidency of President Carter. All the 1970s were a washout economically. Not all of it, but most of it. And that washout was caused by the bubble of the 1960s. And the bubble before that was the bubble of the 1920s, which led to the Great Depression. And this one went far, far higher than either of those two. Far, far more out of control. So now there are people surprised that we're all losing our houses and losing our jobs, losing our businesses. You know, this is disingenuous to pretend surprise after we did this. And we have to say that we did it. Nobody did it to us. But I'm writing down some notes. Excuse me just for a second here. I need to write down a note because a thought came into my head. Hopefully I'll remember. Those words aren't going to make any sense, I'm afraid. When I'm in a rush, I skip a lot of words, and then when I go back, I'm never able to make sense of my notes that are written at that sort of in that sort of way. But I get it relieves some sort of guilt to scribble them down anyway. But you know, PK Crafter is looking at this fellow who I guess he was a banker, who said he saw the problems, but he made the loans anyway. And then he says, well, it's not my fault, you know, I'm not responsible. And PK Crafter says, amazing. Now, is it amazing? Well, in a way it is. It's objectively, it's an amazing fact. But PK Crafter's point, something that has really gotten to be a pet peeve with me is people point fingers at others and they don't look at the man in the mirror. PK Crafter was encouraging passive investing during this time. I posted on a discussion board with him. And he's put up numerous posts in defense of this quote-unquote strategy of leaving your stock allocation at a high level when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. That didn't contribute to the bubble? Where does he think bubbles come from? You know, one banker making a loan, an ill-advised loan, doesn't create a bubble. People advocating passive investing on discussion boards sure do. Where did he think the bubble came from? He's pointing a finger at this fellow, and of course it's true. It would have been great if the banker had stood up and said, no, I won't make this loan. But what, you know, realistically, what do you think would have happened? If he stood up and said he wouldn't make the loan, he would have gotten the boot. There were stock analysts who stood up and said, I'm not going to go along with this. I'm not going to continue to pretend that this isn't a problem. And they got the boot. They were kicked out of their firms. They were replaced by people who would say it was fine. Passive investing's just fine. No problem. You can't time the market. Stocks for the long run. Buy and hold. Pixie dust. It's so much easier to point to the other guy. It's so much easier to point the finger. We all need to look within, because you don't have a bubble of the size of the passive investing bubble without millions of people participating in it. I participated in it. I can't tell you the year, but I learned about the problem of overvaluation from reading John Bogle's book, and that was in the mid-90s, but there was the I think it was the Christmas time before that year, and I don't know what year it was. This was mid-90s, say 95, something like that. I had a small amount of money in stocks. It wasn't a large amount. But my wife and I were trying to save a lot of money, and, you know, we had papers, you know, saying, you know, where we hoped to be, what our plan was. And I got a boost in my stock numbers, and I looked at it, I think it was around Christmas time, the end of the year, I guess. And I looked at it and I said, wow, you know, I don't know how much it was, you know, a couple $1,000s, but I said, hey, we're moving faster than I thought. And I was happy. I was cheering on a bubble. I wasn't happy because I earned 6.5% real that year, which would be supported by the economic realities. I was happy because I got more than that. I was happy because we were in a bubble. And every time somebody gets happy because we are in a bubble, it contributes to the bubble. That's how it works. My job is to explain to people why bubbles are bad and how to fight them. And you fight them by hating them. That's why, you know, Petey Person says, oh, Rob used to be such a puppy dog of a poster before he discovered the errors in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. You can't be a puppy dog talking about bubbles, because by the very nature of a bubble is that people don't want to hear about it. You know, there are three things that make it hard to combat a bubble. One is, by definition, it's dumb. You know, there's a reason they call it a bubblehead, you know. Bubbles are dumb. There is no rationale for the sort of stock returns we saw in the 1990s. There is no economic justification that can be offered. There is no rationale that can be offered for passive investing. The idea that you don't need to lower your stock allocation when prices are insanely dangerous. No one can ever offer a rationale for such a thing. It's transparently absurd. So if you're going to argue against bubbles, you're going to argue against something that is very, very, very dumb. Now, you might think that's a good position to be in. Maybe you think, oh, I like the sound of that. Arguing against something dumb, I'll always be on the winning side of the argument. Well, intellectually, you will be. Intellectually, you can win every battle. But there's two other features of bubbles. One, the second feature is bubbles are always popular. Because if they weren't popular, they wouldn't exist, would they? If passive investing hadn't become the most popular approach to investing, we would have never been in a bubble. And so when you're arguing against the passive investing bubble, you're arguing against something that is popular by definition. So it's very, very dumb and very, very popular. Now you've got a problem. You're arguing against something very, very, very dumb, and you're arguing against something very, very popular. What does that equal? That equals defensiveness. You're going to be telling lots and lots of people that they have done something very, very, very dumb. How do you think that's going to make them feel? It's going to make them feel bad. It's going to make them feel defensive. If you're going to take up arms in the anti-bubble league, you're going to have to develop a strong armor, because you're going to be making lots of people angry. Because people, everyone with a little bit of common sense knows that bubbles can't last, and everyone with a little bit of common sense knows that passive investing doesn't make any sense. But everyone who's made money from a bubble or from passive investing doesn't want to hear it. The third feature of a bubble is that it is a social phenomenon. It's not an economic phenomenon. And people want to believe that investing is an economic question and it's about numbers. And it's about all the stuff that's hard. And when you start talking about bubbles, you're talking about gooey, delicate emotions. And they're going to make lots of people feel queasy. So bubbles are easy to argue about in that they're dumb as all get out. So intellectually, you're going to have all the firepower you need. But they're dangerous to take on because they're always popular, insanely popular. And because they're dumb, they are protected by walls of defensiveness. And on top of all that, they are social in nature, which means you're not going to be arguing numbers. You can bring numbers in, but at the core, you're not going to be arguing numbers, and you're not going to be arguing, you're not really even arguing facts. You're arguing feelings. So you're getting into some delicate territory when you take on bubbles. Now, then of course, P.K. Crafter says, those who chose greed over responsibility should be punished. And this is the pet peeve, this idea that we have to punish all these people. Now, there are some cases where people went so far over the line that some sort of punishment is appropriate. But bubbles don't come about because of a handful of bad guys. Bubbles come about because, as I say, they're a social phenomenon. They come about because millions of people participate in them. Millions of people help build them. And millions of people fight any efforts to bring them down. That's the bubble phenomenon. Now, the part of P.K. Crafter's post that most disturbed me is where he says, bubbles, he says, this example shows why bubbles will always exist. Now, this is the common view. I have seen, since the price crash, there were articles around before the price crash that pointed out all the flaws of passive investing. And I used to make a list of them. But they were rare in those days. You'd see one every 3 months or every 6 months. Now you see one every day. Lots of people are pointing out that the efficient market theory was discredited years ago, decades ago. That's the intellectual framework for passive investing. All of the stock investing you've heard for the last 30 years is based on something called the efficient market theory, and the efficient market theory was discredited almost 30 years ago. The case against it's been getting stronger and stronger over time. But it was discredited in a serious way, dating back to the early 1980s. And now people are coming out saying it. Not still not as many as I want to hear, but I see more and more of it. It's gotten to a point I can't keep track of all the articles. I try to link to them at the Today's Passion feature at my site, but there's too many. I'd be linking to, I'd have to link to more than one a day. I'd have to start linking to at least two a day because these articles are coming out from every direction. Lots of people. Well, I'm tempted to say lots of people knew where we were headed. The proper thing to say is everyone knew where we were headed. Everyone on some level of consciousness knew that this was nonsense. Bubbles, as I say, they're obvious nonsense. And the whole trick, the only thing that allows a bubble to develop is we all close our eyes. We all pretend. And so I think it's a mistake. I think it's a mistake now that the bubble has burst and now that we're suffering the consequences, I think it's a mistake for us to blame small groups of people like bankers. It's fine to blame bankers. They have their share in it. But it's not just bankers. And it's not just academics. And it's not just experts. And it's not just passive investors. It's all of us. And we all have to understand our role in stopping bubbles. Now, the worst thing we can do, and this is becoming conventional wisdom, and it's disturbing. What people are saying is, now people are admitting there's a bubble. You know, I've been posting on the problems of passive investing for 7 years. And it used to be people would deny there was a bubble. Oh, there's no bubble. And, oh, how do you know? It might not be a bubble. And, oh, stocks might go up. Who knows? Now it seems to be a virtual universal consensus that there was a bubble. People just refer to it casually, talking about the bubble. They don't even prove the case. It's like everyone accepts it. But now what you hear is, oh, bubbles are inevitable. Nothing we can do. Well, they're inevitable if we don't do anything about them. Bubbles are caused by humans. They're not... You know, they don't come from outer space. They don't invade us. Bubbles are a human-created, human-fostered phenomenon. And we're the humans. We have the power. We can stop bubbles. It's not true that bubbles are inevitable. But there are things we have to do to stop them. And the simple way of saying it is, you don't like bubbles, you don't like losing your job, you don't like losing your home, you don't like economic crashes, you don't like depressions, you don't like what comes with bubbles, then develop a hatred for bubbles. If you study the history of investing, what you will find is that stocks offer a tremendous value proposition at all times, except when there are bubbles developing. And when a bubble develops, stocks wipe people out. They wipe out millions of investors. And every one of us is going to experience at least one bubble in our lifetime, if not two or three. So you're going to be faced with it. And, you know, unless you're, you know, if you're retired today, you may not see another bubble, but If you know, the last bubble, you know, was broken in the early to mid 1970s. That's, you know, a little over 30 years ago. So if you're 40 years old today, you may be seeing another bubble in your 70s. Are you going to let it destroy you again? Are you going to do something about it? Because we all have so many years to invest. Investing lifespan of, say, 60 years. A bubble can wipe out the gains of 20 years. Are you going to allow 20 years of your investing gains to be wiped out by this bubble, by not learning about it, not learning how to cope with it, or by the next bubble? Or are you going to learn? Bubbles, dealing with bubbles is the single most important thing you need to do. It's sort of like, you know, jumping out of an airplane. You know, if you're jumping out of an airplane, you know, it's a risky thing, and you have to learn, well, what are the dangers? You know, what can happen? You know, are there circumstances where the parachute, you know, doesn't come out? Well, if that's so, what do you do? Or say you're trying to learn how to fly an airplane, you know, like this guy, you know, this hero pilot, where the engines went out on his plane and he had to land, you know, on water. He maybe, I don't know if he ever had to do that in his life. He probably never had to do that in his entire life, but he had to learn how to do it. You know, think of that like a bubble. You know, if you're flying the plane, you know, somebody might say, well, why do I need to learn how to do that? It's never going to happen. The odds are it won't happen. I've been flying for years. It never happened. Well, what if it does happen? That's how you should think about bubbles. Before you put $10 into the stock market, you learn about bubbles. And then you wipe out 80% of the risk of stock investing by doing that. That's the killer risk. We all are taught to ignore bubbles. That's passive investing. Don't worry about price. Stocks for the long run. Can't time the market. And then we all get wiped out. And it takes, in many cases, it really does take decades. In some cases, it takes decades for people even to be willing to put money back into stocks. That's how painful it can be. And, you shouldn't assume that it's over today. Because as of today, we're down at fair value. But in the three earlier bubbles experienced in U.S. history, the bubble wasn't over until we went 50% lower than where we are today. So we could have a long way down yet. So you need to learn about bubbles, and you need to learn how to stop bubbles. And if you say the words bubbles are inevitable, you're contributing to the problem. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If we all think bubbles are inevitable, bubbles are inevitable. If we're all on the alert for bubbles, see, bubbles are a social phenomenon. If we all are on the alert for bubbles and we all speak out against bubbles when we see them, bubbles are impossible. So it's up to us. We have the power. The bankers don't have the power. The experts don't have the power. We have the power. Middle-class investors have the power to stop bubbles. If you give up on stocks, you contribute to the problem. This is something I'm seeing a lot of today, and I sympathize. People, the case that I dealt with, in some posting I did, was this guy Frugal Dad, who has a blog, and it's a great blog. But he put up a post saying he's thinking of getting out of stocks, and his reasons were the best reasons you could give. He didn't give one of these phony baloney rationalization discussions. He talked about real live human beings. He talked about himself and how he tries to, he's trying to plan for financial freedom, and he tries to record his progress, and the stock crash caused him to fall behind, and he's unhappy about it. Good for him. And he talked about his parents, some relation. It could have been a sister or brother, but he was talking about family relations who have suffered losses in their 401k. And he says, I don't like seeing people in this kind of pain. And he says, I'm just getting disgusted with stocks. Well, it's an understandable reaction. I'm sympathetic. But that's not the answer. Because if he does that, and I don't mean just him, but if millions do that, those people will all delay their retirements by many years because you cannot get the sorts of returns you get in stocks in other asset classes without working it really hard. So he's hurting himself, and all those people are hurting themselves that are thinking of doing that. That's not the answer, and they're hurting all the rest of us because it's the people who are disgusted with stocks who are the ones who can turn it around. If you get disgusted with stocks, don't get disgusted with stocks. Get disgusted with the stock strategy that you've been using. Get disgusted with passive investing. Then you turn it around. If we would teach people how to stop bubbles, there wouldn't be any bubbles. But we need to work together. One person can't do it. It's got to be a group effort. It's got to be, just as bubbles are a social phenomenon, fighting bubbles is a social phenomenon. We need millions of middle-class investors who say, I'm not leaving stocks. I have a right. I have a right to financial freedom. I have a right to a decent retirement. And I'm not walking away. I'm not getting scared. But I'm sure as shooting not going to sit around here and suffer through another stock crash like this. So I'm going to expect the quote-unquote experts to start talking straight to me. Starting here, starting now. That's what we need to hear. We need to hear some gumption and some backbone. It's not selfish. It's not like you're showing gumption and backbone just for yourself. You're showing it to protect the entire community, all your friends and neighbors and coworkers. Because when you speak out against bubbles, when you speak out against passive investing, you help everyone. You help everyone. It's a win, 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 win. There's not one person in this world who benefits from another stock bubble. There's not one person in the United States that benefits from seeing our economy go over a cliff. When you quit stocks, you know, there used to be a saying, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Well, if you quit stocks, you're contributing to the bubble, because your intellect and your decency and your goodwill is no longer a part of the equation if you walk out of the room. You leave it, you know, you leave the field to the bad guys. This is something I used to see on discussion boards over and over again. Goon posters would come out and try to take over a discussion board that had been built up through years of effort of thousands of fine people. And a small group of goons would show up, and then I would watch. And every day, two or three of the good posters would leave. And after a month, you know, the board was decimated. And each and every one of them would say, oh, you know, I don't get paid for posting. I'm not gonna be insulted. I'm not gonna be humiliated. I'm not gonna get down in the mud with these people. Well, you shouldn't be insulted, and you shouldn't be down in the mud, but you shouldn't walk away from your discussion board either. Not if you care about the people who build it, or if you care about the learning resource that was created. You should organize your fellow community members. Say, let's stand up together. Let's go to the site owner. Let's demand action. Let's have this problem taken care of. The same thing with the stock market. When you see people start to promote get-rich-quick schemes, and passive investing is the biggest get-rich-quick scheme of them all, the idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices get to insanely dangerous levels has hurt more middle-class investors than any idea in the history of personal finance. So when you see people promoting that idea, you have to speak up. If you don't understand all the ins and outs, you don't understand all the ins and outs. I don't know that any of us do, but all the same, you ask your questions. You demand straight talk answers. And when you do that, you help not only yourself, you help all your fellow community members. If you deny the bubble, you contribute to the problem. This is what I was talking about that I used to see in the days before the price crash. People would flat out deny it. You would tell people the fair value P10 level is 14 and we would be at 29. And I would point out that this was a bubble, and you'd get this answer, oh, everything's changed. We're never going to go to fair value again. We'll never again be below 20. And it's not that one person would say that. You know, there are going to be outlier personalities in any group. The fact that one person would say it is not shocking. But others would just stand there or sit on their hands and say nothing. You don't need an IQ of 140 to understand that if the normal P10 level is 14, there's going to be a day when we're going to be back at 14. We're not going to be at double 14 for the remainder of time. If you deny a bubble, you contribute to the bubble. If you deny the very possibility of a bubble, you certainly contribute to the bubble. That's passive investing. Passive investing is rooted in the efficient market theory. The efficient market theory says all investors are rational. They're all rationally trying to maximize their return from stocks. Wouldn't it be a wonderful world if that were so? If we're all trying to rationally pursue our self-interest, how is it that we created a bubble? Answer me that, Mr. Passive Investing Advocate. If the efficient market theory applied in the real world, there could never be a bubble. It's impossible, because bubbles hurt everyone. But we sure do have them, don't we? The people who came up with this efficient market theory should spend 15 minutes looking at the historical data and thinking over what it means that bubbles recur every 20 or 30 years. How is it that this impossible thing keeps happening in a world in which all investors are rational? If they're all rational, why is the price so irrational? When you follow an investing strategy that rules out the possibility of bubbles, you ensure bubbles. You contribute to the problem. Passive investing is the enemy of the middle-class investor. If you bow down to gurus, you contribute to the problem. I was posting on there was a thread today at the Goon Central board, and I think I mentioned in an earlier podcast, I was wondering a couple days ago how much, you know, John Graney is the leader of the campaign of terror against the retire early boards. And I was wondering, you know, it hit me one day, because the thing that baffles me about these campaigns of terror is not one person benefits. Not one person benefits from ineffective investing. We all benefit from learning how to invest effectively, you know? So the work that I've done is work that benefits every single middle-class investor in the world. And it sort of baffles me that there are these people that hate it with such a passion that they'll burn entire discussion boards to the ground to stop people from being able to ask their questions. And so I was thinking about Graney. He's the leader. He used to be a friend of mine. I think of him as a friend to this day, but it would be fair to say the feeling's not mutual. But I was thinking the other day, how much has Graney lost? He has a 90% stock allocation. And I did this rough calculation on the podcast. I said he must have lost between $500,000 and $1 million. So I asked him, you know, he was posting on a thread there, and I said, John, are you willing to tell us how much you lost? And he answered, and he said, I've lost well in excess of $1 million. Well in excess of $1 million. If you've lost well in excess of $1 million and you don't do anything about it, you don't change your investing strategy, you contribute to the problem, man. I mean, be real. If I had lost well in excess of $1 million, I would be sick. To think what that means. Well in excess of $1 million. For what? For what? Personal pride. This guy had hundreds of people trying to help him understand investing. Thousands of people pleading that he permit honest posting on safe withdrawal rates and other valuation-related questions. And for 7 years, he's devoted his life to stopping it. And the consequence at the end is he loses well in excess of $1 million. And he still can't give it up. Not even give it up. He can't give it up enough even to allow people to talk. Forget about giving up passive investing. He can't even give it up enough to allow people to try to explain to him. If you lose in excess of $1 million and you haven't reconsidered your investing strategy, you are contributing to the problem. If there's anybody out there who thinks that bubbles aren't a serious business, or if there's anybody out there who thinks investing is a rational endeavor, and there are human beings out there losing well in excess of $1 million, and they're sticking with the investment strategy that caused that, and these people can say with a straight face that they think the market is efficient and they think investors are rational, man, oh man, oh man. I would be sick to my stomach. I don't wish it on them. I do not wish it on them. My friend John, I do not wish it on you. Oh, boy. Heaven help us all. If you bow down to gurus, well, you contribute to the problem. So on that thread, I don't think I'm going to have time to take a look at the thread, but during the podcast, but a discussion came up about, you know, about the boards. And, you know, I mentioned that, you know, if we could, if we open up the boards to honest posting, you know, we don't have to, I certainly don't want to ban posting on passive investing, but I want to give these people the opportunity to hear the other side of the story. I definitely want to do that. I think that's healthy all the way around, and I want them to try to persuade me and all the rational investors of the merit of their position, and then everybody learns. So it's a win-win-win-win-win. But the first thing I would do the day I'm back at Vanguard Diehards or Bogleheads.org, the first thing I would do is I'd put up a thread and say, hey, let's, you know, John Bogle and Bill Bernstein, they come to these annual meetings of the Bogleheads or the Diehards, whatever they call themselves. I would call for a special meeting. I'd say, hey, if how about we extend an invitation to John Bogle and tell him we're going to have a special annual, you know, not an annual meeting, but it could be the annual meeting. It could just change the date. But it's going to focus on this economic crisis. And we're going to ask him, you know, all the problems with passive investing that we've uncovered over the first 7 years of discussions. And we're going to say, John, we think you're on the wrong track on some of this stuff. Your own statements are contradictory. And here's a list of our concerns. Can you please address them? And he'll address them, and Bernstein will address them, and, you know, I can speak. John Walter Russell can present his research. And you know, we could have a roundtable discussion. We can have questions from the audience. And if Bogle acknowledge, you know, there's two things can happen. He can say, he could give good answers, theoretically. I don't think there are good answers, but theoretically, he could give good answers, in which case we would have learned wonderful things. Or he could acknowledge that there are some holes in the passive investing idea, some big holes. And then we go to the media and we get it written up. We go to the Wall Street Journal. We go to Money Magazine. We get about the business of restoring confidence in our market, which is how we get this economy back on track. And the indexing revolution goes to a whole new level of success. You know, this time rooted in something real. So, you know, I was sort of mentioning this without a lot of detail, but, you know, the thought sort of hit me as I'm saying this, you know, they're going to be opposed to this. The goons are going to be opposed to this. The goons probably can't even imagine it. You know, they're thinking, oh, you know, we're going to have Bogle admitting he's wrong. Oh, as if this is this terrible thing. I always bring up that quote when I was going to appear at the meeting. I was going to do this, not on quite so grand a scale, but I was going to appear at one of the annual meetings. And Mel Lindauer said, you know, we have to change the rules. We can't allow Rob. And he says, I have an obligation to quote-unquote protect Bogle from Rob's questions. I have to protect Bogle. What the heck's he have to protect him from? Some guy who posts on the internet? John Bogle can't answer questions from some guy who posts on the internet? You know, I said, you're dissing him, man. That's a diss. It's like they're treating him like he's a pathetic baby. And he's not. Bogle taught me about valuations back in the mid-90s from his book. So, I don't view that as at all, you know, an unlikely scenario. But I think Mel Lindauer sure does, and John Graney sure does. But these people have this idea in their head that, you know, you assume some sort of guru status, and it means you can't make a mistake. The underlying thought is John Bogle can't make a mistake. And I think I mentioned on an earlier podcast a long time ago, there was a woman there, I think her screen name was Kathleen Ryan, and she was a poster I liked. We were friendly, and she was just nice. But she put up a post there, you know, when I brought up this thing about appearing at the meeting, and she says, "Rob, you know," it was like the "Rob, why are you so mean" thing. "Rob, he's such a nice man. Bogle's such a nice man." Of course he's a nice man. That's why he wants to learn about his mistake. That's why he wants to fix it. The idea seems to be, if you're an investing guru, you can never admit a mistake. You can never make a mistake. You can't even allow the possibility that you can make a mistake. This is insanity. Is there any other field of human endeavor where it is believed that people can't make mistakes? It freaks me out. It's just so thick. This idea is so thick. People just think it's the end. And boy, am I coming from a different place. My feeling is, if I make a mistake and somebody points it out, they're saving my neck. I'd rather them point it out than have me go down a false path. All right. But the point is, if you bow down to gurus, if you listen to experts, that's good. But if you bow down to gurus and you put them up on a pedestal, you contribute to the problem. Because what you're doing is you're not only getting it wrong yourself, you're taking actions that cause this expert to get it wrong, and then that expert spreads his wrong knowledge to millions of people. So, you know, please don't do that. If you become defensive when someone points out your errors, you contribute to the bubble. We wouldn't have bubbles if we didn't make mistakes, would we? I mentioned how dumb they are. So if we're having a bubble, there's a lot of people out there who have made dumb decisions about their investing decisions. So the only way out is for people to point out your mistakes. There is no way to correct a mistake if you don't know about it. So if you become defensive when a neighbor or a coworker or a fellow community member points out a mistake, you're contributing to the bubble. If you chicken out, you contribute to the bubble. Scott Burns said, when he wrote a column about the retirement risk evaluator, the new school safe withdrawal rate research of John Walter Russell, he said, the reason you don't hear about the errors in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, the studies we all use to plan our retirements, he wrote this in July of 2005, so my post pointing out the errors was in May of 2002, so this was more than three years, after we had discovered the errors. He said, the reason you haven't heard this written up in the media is, it is information most people don't want to hear. So what he's saying is that people in the media don't tell us when they know we're investing insanely, dangerously, recklessly, because they know it would hurt our little feelings. That's called chickening out. That's called chickening out. If you chicken out, you contribute to the bubble. That's what causes the problem. If all of these experts and these journalists had pointed out the problems of the bubble and spoken out against the bubble when it first started to develop, we never would have gotten to that point where you couldn't talk about it. If you rationalize, you contribute to the bubble. You know, Schroeder brought up a point when we were having the discussion about Graney's, you know, $1 million plus loss. And Schroeder said, maybe John Graney should have an update. And he's got something at his site where he puts up all these phony baloney numbers and tries to show that being overinvested in stocks is a good thing. And the way he does it is he'll say, people out of stocks are, and he'll look around the internet to find the lowest rate of return you could get. And he'll say, I found one with a 1% return. So he assumes that anybody out of stocks is getting 1%, even though tips are paying 4% real. And then he'll say, stocks were paying 1.5%, so stocks were better. And Schroeder says, let's update some of those studies. Let's make ourselves feel good. Let's kid ourselves some more. That's the answer. That's the answer to our economic crisis. The problem is we haven't been kidding ourselves enough. If all of the human energy that was devoted to kidding ourselves was devoted to learning how to invest effectively, we wouldn't have to worry about stock bubbles, I'll tell you that much. We'd all be able to retire 5 years sooner than we can today if we would take all that human energy that's being wasted in these rationalizations of bad behavior and we spend it trying to learn how to invest effectively for the long run. If you engage in rationalizing, you contribute to the bubble problem. If you minimize the problems you learn about with your investing model, you contribute to the bubble. I remember a post by Bill Bernstein at the Vanguard Diehards, and somebody pointed out that the efficient market theory has been discredited. You know what he said? He didn't disagree. He said, well, it's only a model. It's only a model. The model you use for your investing strategies is the thing that determines all the decisions you make. If the model is wrong, you've got it all wrong. That's why we're in this economic crisis. It's because our model was wrong. And Bill Bernstein was smart enough to see that before the price crash. But he waved it away and he said, well, it's only a model, not anything big, no biggie, nothing we have to fix. It's only a model. If you minimize the problem, you contribute to the bubble. If you become embarrassed by discussions of emotion, you contribute to the problem. How many times I've had people tell me, Rob, can't you just put up investing tips? Do you have to talk about goons and anger and hate and shame and guilt? We don't come to investing sites to hear about that sort of thing, Rob. You sound wounded. Can you talk about some numbers? Can you put up some tips, investing tips? You got any good tips? Can you give us a scheme or some rules of thumb, maybe? We got rules of thumb coming out of our ears. But they didn't save us from the economic crisis. Because what we need to do is to not talk about what we want to talk about. We need to talk about what we need to talk about. The problem when you have a bubble is an emotional problem. A bubble is a social phenomenon. So you have to talk about human interaction. You have to talk about deception. Bubbles are fostered by heavy, heavy doses of deception. You have to talk about intimidation. Bubbles are fostered by heavy, heavy doses of intimidation. You have to talk about word games. Bubbles are fostered by heavy, heavy doses of word games. This is what investing is about, people. I don't do it because I like it. Any more than a doctor, you know, cuts you open because he likes cutting people open. He cuts you open because you've got cancer inside you and he needs to get it out. Or whatever it is. That's why he cuts you open. It's the same thing with somebody who writes about the realities of investing. He talks about deception because that's the problem. And he talks about intimidation because that's the problem. And he talks about word games because that's the problem. That's the thing we've got to solve. Are bubbles inevitable? They're inevitable if we don't talk about the problem. We make them inevitable. We can overcome it, but we can't overcome it if we're not willing to get our hands dirty. It takes courage and it takes love. If you overreact, you contribute to the bubble. I see people, you know, they see the mistakes that Bogle has made and that Bernstein has made and that Burns has made and all these others. And they overreact. They say, oh, it's fraud. And, oh, they're dishonest. They're dumb. They're not dumb. And they're not dishonest. They're misguided. They're scared. They want to be liked. They want to be liked too much. They don't think through carefully enough how much pain they've caused. They've rationalized. They've made themselves believe that before the price crash, they led themselves to believe that the bubble wouldn't hurt as many people as it did. They talked themselves into that just like all the rest of us did. They're humans, in other words. They're humans. They're humans, for good and for ill. And the names that I mentioned are humans that have made great contributions, fantastic contributions. And the humans that I mentioned are humans who have made big mistakes. And if you overreact in either direction, if you overreact to the good stuff by making them gurus and saying you'll never question them, you contribute to the bubble. And if you overreact to the bad stuff by getting overly angry, you become a goon yourself, and you contribute to the problem because people tune you out and because you discredit yourself, because people know that these are good guys and smart guys. If you overreact, you contribute to the problem. If you want to fight bubbles, you have to fight fair. It's not always easy because of the reasons I mentioned at the top of the podcast. Bubbles are popular, and people are gonna come down on you like a ton of bricks. And bubbles are social; it's a social phenomenon. So you're gonna have to wade into some material that may not be to your liking. But if you overreact, you contribute to the problem. It's not that bubbles are inevitable. It's that fighting bubbles is tricky. You need a master's degree. I didn't go to school to learn about it. I learned it the hard way. I learned it on the streets. I had a discussion board under attack, and these people were my friends, and I had to defend them. And to defend them, I had to learn something about bubbles, because the people trying to destroy it were promoting bubbles. They were promoting passive investing, which is, you know, the strategy for building a massive bubble. If you overreact, you contribute to the problem. If you pursue other fixes, you contribute to the problem. The Obama administration has not been in long enough to make criticism justified, but I have, you know, there's a separate podcast where I argue that the stimulus bill is a sideshow. If we spend, you know, it's only been a few months, but if we spend too long dealing with these distractions, every month we spend on a stimulus bill or something of that nature, you know, bailout bill or whatever it happens to be, every month we spend on that stuff is a month we could have spent dealing with the real problem. The bubble and the investing theory that caused it. That's what we should be talking about. And we're not talking about it because it's easier to talk about this other stuff. But when you give in to the distraction and you turn people's energies, there's only so much energy in the world. There's only so much human energy. When you turn people's attention in that direction, you contribute to the bubble. You let it live. You let it thrive. You let it grow. It's not hard. It's not intellectually hard to figure out that bubbles are bad. It's not intellectually hard to understand what needs to be done to deflate them. But it takes some courage. It's not easy work. If you say we can't solve the problem, you contribute. I said that before. If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. If you give up, if you throw up your hands and say, well, bubbles are inevitable, there's always going to be bubbles. Look, there always have been bubbles, but that doesn't mean that can't change. Bubbles are more dangerous now than they've ever been in the past because middle-class investors have their money in stocks to finance their retirements. And that wasn't really true in earlier bubbles, not to the extent it is today. So we have more motivation for stopping bubbles than we've ever had before. And we have more tools. We have this internet communications medium we can use to inform people of the dangers of passive investing. If it were being put to good use, so far it's been used to promote passive investing. That's not going to help. But the tool can be put to good uses or bad uses. We can put it to good uses. It's there. And used properly, the internet can stop bubbles. Because we can inform people of how much suffering they're causing themselves and others by going along with these crazy investing ideas. If you compromise your beliefs, you contribute to the problem. There's a fellow named retired at 48, and he's a very popular poster at the Bogleheads board, or was. And he became a little too popular. And there's something they do to posters who become a little too popular at that board. They cut their heads off. And they've done it again and again. They brag that they haven't had to ban a large number of posters. But if you check the roster of those who have been banned, there's a common theme. Every one was one of the most popular posters in the history of the board. And every one had some difference with passive investing. Those are the two common themes. There's a great pent-up demand for realistic discussion of stock investing. But that's perceived as a threat by the passive investing dogmatist. So retire at 48. He entered discussions with Morningstar to open up honest posting at Vanguard Diehards. And I sent him an email, and I said, great job. And I sent him some links, giving him the history of the problems we've experienced. And he sent a nice email back, and we had a little exchange. But, I indicated that I would keep his email confidential. But, the wording of it, I would not post the email unless he gave me permission. But somebody asked a question, how are things going at the blog? And I gave a survey sort of answer. I said, I've gotten an email from retired at 48 and he's thinking it over. He's checking things out. And he got upset about that. He said, I wanted this to be confidential. People can twist it. Well, it's true, people will twist it. The goons were over there in 10 seconds when they heard about it. But he was encouraging them. Drip Guy is one of the lead goons at Goon Central, and he put up a post saying, oh, Drip Guy, you're so wonderful, you're such a great poster. Now, that part is fine. Drip Guy can be a good poster. So I don't really object to that. I think that's a healthy thing, to try to extend the hand of friendship. That's healthy. But there was no mention of the abuse of posting, and that signals to the goons fear. When you don't mention the elephant standing in the living room, they get it. The goons understand power plays, if they understand nothing else. So, I wish retired at 48 a lot of luck. I think he's trying to do a very good thing. But when he signals fear by trying to negotiate with these ruthlessly abusive posters, he contributes to the problem. They'll give him his little ghetto. They'll allow you to make your little points every now and then. So long as you don't explore it, the rule they usually follow is you can mention the realities of evaluations in a post, but you can't start a thread linking to the stock return predictor, or you can't start a thread, Larry Swedrow put up a post pointing out that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are garbage in, garbage out, but he doesn't start a thread linking to the retirement risk evaluator. That's what you don't do. Because that makes them, quote unquote, look bad. Wouldn't make them look bad if they jumped in and contributed and helped out, but they don't want to help out because it's a threat to the passive investing model or to the popularity of it. When you compromise your beliefs, you contribute to the problem. It's good. It's good to reach out the hand of friendship. That's healthy. That's constructive. But it's not good to compromise principle. The rule I've taken is I will post honestly or I will post not. I will reach out the hand of friendship to anyone, no matter how long their record of abusive posting, but I will post honestly on safe withdrawal rates or I won't post. If a community member asks, what is the safe withdrawal rate, I will report the number accurately. End of story, you know, end of paragraph, end of sentence, end of chapter, end of story. And if you don't do that, you contribute to the problem. And I've seen a lot of that. If you decide things by a vote, you contribute to the problem. Something that Grainy used to do all the time back at Motley Fool was, we'd have a discussion. The people advocating rational investing or valuation-informed indexing would win every point. And he'd say, let's take a vote. And he'd put up some idiotic poll. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, you wouldn't have a bubble if passive investing wasn't popular. So he'd win the vote. And he'd say, oh, we win. If you get into a mind frame when you think things can be decided by a vote and not by logic, you contribute to the bubble. You know, or if somebody says, oh, 90% of the experts advocate passive investing, 90% of them think it's just fine, you're essentially deciding things by a vote. What matters is not whether 90% support it or 50% support it or 10% support it. What matters is, do the 10% who don't support it have strong arguments? If the 10% who don't support it can show historical data showing that passive investing has been tried 4 times and it has brought bone-crushing losses to everyone who followed it on each of those 4 times, the 10% minority wins. You don't decide things by a vote. And if you start thinking you can decide things by a vote, you contribute to the problem. If you think short term, you contribute to the problem. I think of these site owners that imposed a ban on honest posting on safe withdrawal rates or on valuations in general. And you know, you try to think. What usually happened is the boards ended up being destroyed. But obviously, the site owners didn't want the boards to be destroyed, so why did they do that? I think they did it because of short-term thinking. I remember there was a guy, the board administrator at Motley Fool. We exchanged a number of emails, and he told me one time, he said, I've been administering boards for a long time, Rob. You know, I know what it's like. He wasn't saying that what he was doing was right. He wasn't saying that the goons were not abusive. He wasn't saying that the community hadn't expressed a desire to permit honest posting. He was saying, I have to do this. I have to do the expedient thing, whether it's right or wrong. And today there is no retire early board at Motley Fool. Or there's no posting on early retirement at it anymore. He destroyed that board through short-term thinking. And the same thing's true even on direct discussion of investing. You know, when people look at the results, you know, all during from 1995 through 2008, stocks were at insanely dangerous price levels, and people would say, oh, well, the results aren't that bad. Well, of course they're not that bad before the price crash. That's what bubbles are about. They're about fooling us into thinking, we can do what's never been done. We can, you know, we can go where we, you know, people have never been. We can do something that's never been done before. And until the price crash, that seems realistic, but that's short-term thinking. Long-term thinking is saying, wait a minute. What's your return? What's your long-term return going to be after the inevitable price crash? That's how you have to analyze it. When you analyze it that way, you get very, very, very different answers. If you think short term, you contribute to the problem. Are bubbles inevitable? I say no. Bubbles are a common phenomenon. phenomenon we've seen play out over and over again. Once the pain is far enough in the past that we can forget about it. But bubbles are really the whole story of stock investing. Without bubbles, stock investing is a no-brainer. Stock investing is a win-win-win-win-win, except for bubbles. And if you happen to experience a bubble during your lifetime, you can lose just about everything you gained during all the other time periods. And it's virtually certain you're going to see a bubble in your lifetime unless you do something about it to stop it. Stopping bubbles, just as bubbles are a social phenomenon, stopping bubbles must be a social phenomenon. That's the answer to the question. Bubbles are inevitable unless we get smart about what it takes to stop them. My belief is 70% of what it takes to be an effective long-term stock investor is understanding bubbles and what it takes to stop them. And that's the 70% that everybody's afraid to talk about for all the reasons I've listed in this podcast. When we talk about it, when we get over our fear, when we suffer enough pain that we don't want to keep hurting ourselves and all of our loved ones anymore, when we work up the courage to stop bubbles, to hate bubbles, we should hate bubbles. You know, I'm not a person who ordinarily advocates hate, but you know, it's like that Peanuts cartoon. I love people except for people who hate people. You know, there are certain things that are just loathsome, and bubbles hurt human beings and other living things. They do. We have to speak out against it. That's why I speak out so strongly about passive investing, because passive investing is the road to bubbles. Passive investing, under all its various names, it goes under different names at different times. But the idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels is how bubbles are achieved. So if you hate bubbles, you hate passive investing. And if you love stock investing, and if you love financial freedom, you should hate bubbles. Because bubbles are what destroy stock investing. Bubbles are what destroy financial freedom. Bubbles are what is working today to destroy our economic and even political system at this point. People are losing faith in their political leaders because there's a feeling that things are just going out of control. And nobody's talking about the real problem. Nobody's talking about what caused things to go out of control. And it wasn't any one little set of bad guys. It was all of us. It was the goon within. The goon within is attracted to bubbles. Look in the mirror. Take a vow never again to fall for this gibberish. Wake up tomorrow morning ready to fight. And you'll earn fantastic returns for the rest of your life as your reward for becoming a anti-bubble warrior. If you have thoughts on the podcast, I'd love to hear from you. Please go to the Contact Rob button at the left-hand side of each page of the site. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.